Hi, everybody. This is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And welcome aboard on another week, a beautiful Tuesday here in New York City. And it seems that spring apparently is here to stay. Apparently. I hope, anyway.
Let's hope.
It's been unbelievable the last few days. And, you know, there's this old song. I'm here in the studio with Kevin O'Donohue. Kevin, thanks for joining me
today. Sure, Ben. How you doing?
There's a well-known old sort of jazz standard called Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. You know that tune?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and it's a great tune, classic tune, one of the great American songbook tunes. And I thought, you know, we'd talk about that a little bit today because we wanted to talk about mental health, something Kevin and I have been talking about over the weekend and that we wanted to discuss with you today.
Do you feel more mentally healthy now that spring is here?
I have to say I do, Kevin. Wow. I definitely do. We've talked about that a lot. Now, the weather has a huge effect on our mood, our outlook, and even our brain chemistry.
Yeah,
so I've noticed that change in the last 2-3 days instantly.
Yeah.
But here's a question. Who's the mentally healthiest person you know? Right? Think back. Is it someone in your family?
Not the happiest.
But. No, not the happiest necessarily, but the mentally healthiest person. Is it yourself? Is it your therapist? Mm-hmm. Besides your therapist, who's your mentally healthiest person?
Yeah,
you know?
Somebody out there in the world. Sometimes.
Think about that. What about you, Kevin?
Mentally healthiest person I know. Actually, Audrey, if you're listening, Audrey, I believe it's somebody here who works at the DeMille Center, actually. She's not a therapist. She's our receptionist. Audrey Clark is the happiest, healthiest, mentally healthiest, I think. She has this even spirit and a ready smile, and it's not phony. It's a real smile. And I guess when I think of her and when I encounter her, I feel that she's somebody really in balance.
I want our listeners out there to think about this question. Who is the mentally healthiest person you know? And the next step is, what are the traits or qualities that they exhibit that leads you to think that about them? So in your case, Kevin, what is it about Audrey that leads you to feel that she's one of the mentally healthiest people you know?
She doesn't look stressed. She never looks stressed. Not that I don't think that that's necessarily the ingredient or an ingredient, but it is with her. She's never stressed. She's never really out of balance. She's never up in her head all the time or much, really. I think she's centered. So I'd say being centered is the biggest quality. And then there's just this natural, ready smile that is always there, that's unphony. I'd have to think about it, but suddenly she comes to mind.
See, for me, it's got to be my sister. And when I think about it, I think about because I know Audrey too, of course, working here in the DeMille Center. And the thing that they share in common is this sort of even-keeled personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely you could find these people in extremes, whether it's an extreme in mood, thought, belief system,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be. Moderation.
Yeah, temperate.
Exactly. And I think that's really central to maintaining a mental health. When we've dug through a lot of the archives, we've gotten one of the great definitions of mental health that we found was it's really three things.
Don't give them away. You're not going to give them away, are you? We want to bait these people. We want the audience out there to call us later and tell us what are the three things. Or what do they feel are the ingredients needed to have a mentally healthy
mood? Okay.
All right, let's look at it.
So think about what you think are the key components of mental health. But I know that we have some key tenets, if you would.
Okay.
What about role models? I mean, have you had a role model for happiness in your life? For many men, I think they look to the strongest male figure in their life, which is often a father, sometimes not.
Sure.
What about you, Kevin? Did you have a role model for happiness and mental health?
Yes, I did, actually. I did have my father as my image of mental health, mostly because he embodied that balance that I'm talking about. And he had this sense of control over everything. Nothing ever fazed him. He anything life came his way, he could handle. And so I kind of incorporated that in myself as a requirement for me to be happy. And it was only when I got older that I realized, wait a second, this isn't necessarily mentally healthy. I can be in control all the time and look balanced and look even keeled and unstressed, but that doesn't mean I'm mentally healthy. I actually had experiences where that was contradicted. So yeah, I had many years of following somebody and introjecting, and in psychology we call it introjecting somebody whose qualities turned out not to really work for me.
Well, what about when you're counseling someone and you see someone for the first time, right? And you meet this person who's come in for a consultation. How do you really approach that? I mean, how do you make an evaluation on someone's mental health? What jumps out at you? What do you use as a sort of benchmark or an indicator for you of this person's mental health state?
Great question. I mean, Armand used to have a thing where he would include in his intake, and I included in mine, is when was the last time you cried? So I try to find out how connected to emotions the person I'm with is. They might, you know, be telling me a story where they are in balance and that they are okay. But I'm always looking around for, well, what is bringing them here? Why are they in front of me? Why are they anxious, or what's going on in their life? And usually going towards their emotions is a rich place to find where they're really unhappy.
Well, what if you ask them, when's the last time you cried? And they said, oh, this morning I spent a couple hours crying.
Okay, then we find out what you're crying about. And then we see how frequent the crying is. I mean, if you're depressed and you come to a therapist, crying is a good thing, because chances are you can't get to that emotion on your own. So if you're doing it in front of me, that's a great thing. So we encourage crying when a person comes to therapy. The question is, can you do it on your own? And if it's chronic, and if you're doing it all the time, then we have to find out what's going on chemically with you.
Do you think happiness, and even on the flip side of that, mental health and or mental ill health is a choice? Even, let's say, a subconscious choice.
Yeah.
Can it be a choice?
Well, I think all therapy is going to be about that. Finding out, have you chosen the way you are because of something that went on in childhood where you feel like you're not deserving to be happy? And somehow you've created all these obstacles to your happiness. So I think ultimately, but we choose happiness, but you have to get to that place. Frequently, there's so many layers of things like addictions and, you know, chronic depression and anxiety and money worries and stresses and things that are covered over your ability to choose.
Sure.
So I wouldn't say happiness is a choice for every adult out there. I think we learn lifestyles and we've gotten into habits and traits and qualities that take away our choices. But ultimately, you want to strip those away so the person can feel like they can choose again.
Right. I think often I see in depressed people that there's a familiarity with the depression and a comfort level.
Yeah.
And the depression almost becomes a security blanket because it's so comfortable. It's so lived in.
Yeah.
Right. It's like your favorite pair of shoes that have been broken in just right.
Yeah.
And I see depression often as a comfort zone. Now, that's not saying that people have chosen depression.
Yeah.
I don't think people choose to be depressed, but I think it can. I often see people who, I believe, in my opinion, are choosing to stay in the depression, because they've worn a sort of groove into their life that it's predictable, it's comfortable, it's familiar.
Yeah.
And right, what's more comfortable than what we know?
Right. But you know, depression's painful too. It is cozy. It can be cozy at certain times of the day because of that familiarity. You know, it's like a nice old sweater or something. But it can also be painful. I mean, I know people who are depressed who wake up in pain. If they were to summarize, how are you feeling? It's actually a kind of pain. So I wouldn't say they choose that either. Somehow their lifestyle has gotten them into this bind. And yeah, if there was an interruption earlier on before the depression grew, then the chances are they could have cut it off at the pass. But for most people, you know, it's a very subtle thing how this thing called depression starts. And I've had clients in my room who I would hand a pillow and say, "This is your depression. Now give it to me." And we would have a tug of war over the depression. And they would fight me. "No, you're not getting my depression." And ultimately, I'd let go and let them have their depression because that's all they've got.
Why do you think that is?
Because it is familiar. And it's like a room that you're looking around in. You don't see any windows and there's no artwork. And and you don't need to get out. You're not, you know, you don't feel any panic. So it's familiar. And when there's nothing else in the room, at least you have something. You have this.
So I think that creates this important question of how do we incentivize, or how do depressed people find the incentive on the other side of that depression to work through it, to address it, to overcome it, right? Either through therapy or through a change in lifestyle or what have you.
And you don't tell them to go out and run 5 miles. You know, there's no simple answer.
Right.
Right. I mean, we could say the people that I know in my life who are depressed, if they do this and they do that and they do that and they, you know, I have a whole list for them. And I want to tell them that. But the truth is, you know, that doesn't work. You can't, I mean, it's almost hostile to even say, go for a walk, you know. It's like telling a diabetic to have more blood.
It's almost patronizing, isn't it?
Yeah. No one
really wants to hear that when they're going through it. But it's important to... I think that comes from a deep inertia, the being stuck in that depression.
Yep.
There's a deep inertia that builds and builds and builds. After so many months or so many years of being in this rut, it's almost like the hole is digging deeper and it becomes harder to climb out. And so I do think that while you're right, it can be very patronizing to tell someone, well, you know, just go for a walk, you'll feel better.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely evidence that physical activity, and like we had, you know, this discussion on brain chemistry just a few weeks ago,
right?
Physical activity can actually trigger brain chemicals,
right? Dopamine,
that are antidepressant in nature.
Sure.
Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue here with you with The Positive Mind.
So with that, we say, what is the alternative? You know, obviously depressed people do not have healthy minds. You can't have both. Either you're depressed and you don't have a healthy mind, or you're not depressed and you have a healthy mind. So what is it? What are the components of a healthy mind? This is what we're going to talk about today, but we're not going to give you the answer right away.
I'll give you my answer, what I believe. Okay. And this may be tied to my personality, but it's something I strongly believe that's important to have to just deal with life, and that's a sense of humor.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. If you can't laugh about it, if you can't laugh about yourself... Right. If you can't have a chuckle here and there,
yeah,
that's a very big thing, isn't it, Kevin?
I think that's going to be a new barometer, a new thing we're going to ask every caller to The Positive Mind. Can you laugh at yourself? If you're not a person who can laugh at themselves, chances are, we're giving away one of the criteria here.
Well, go ahead.
Chances are you don't have the healthiest outlook or the healthiest spirit going. You can get there. Everybody has a sense of humor somewhere in them. But if you're calling The Positive Mind and you want to just complain and you never have, if I can't interrupt you and ask you, "Hey, I have a joke," you know, and you can't laugh at it, then we have a problem.
Well, look, I mean, obviously everyone has a different sense of humor as far as what's funny and what's not, but there is something to be said for a nice belly laugh.
Yeah.
The feelings that it releases.
That's, you know, you're giving me a new question on my intake with clients. When was the last time you had a belly laugh?
Yeah, it's important.
Depressed people even want to be asked that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about it. Can you remember a time where you and others around you laughed so hard about something that you laughed until you were in tears? Because I can remember several times, and they always invariably happen with some of the closest people to me.
Right.
You can't laugh that hard with someone you don't know well. That's an intimate thing, sharing a hysterical laughter with, you know, a loved one.
I wonder, in nature, if an animal is vulnerable if they're laughing. Maybe that's why we can't do it with people we don't fully know. Right? There's a part of us that keeps keeping the guard up. Because when you laugh, I mean, you really let down your defenses. I mean, you're really wide open, and you're convulsing a lot of the way. So I wonder if in nature, do animals laugh? I mean, apes laugh, right?
They do, and they smile, but... That's kind of a tough example because they are one of the closest animals to us, yeah. If not the closest.
Here's a question. Do fish laugh?
Yeah, I doubt it. I doubt it. But listen, yeah, okay. I mean, can someone learn to be happy? There's a lot of people out there who feel that they are fundamentally unhappy people, and that's just their nature.
Yeah.
Do you think that those people can learn to be happy? Or sure. Have they chosen and already made up their mind that they're unhappy?
Big question. Of course I think people can learn to be happy. I think there should be schools in happiness. I think, yeah, there are ingredients to being happy, and that you can learn them, and you can do them, and you can practice them. The question is expectation. I mean, if you have this outlook on life that, life is miserable, there's no meaning, no purpose to my life, and I've been living this way, I'm pretty settled in this idea. Okay, you have all the evidence in the world that would agree with you, sure.
You said something that made me think. You said something about schools on happiness, and that's really interesting. I mean, let's say there was a happiness university, or at least, you could go to a university and get a bachelor's in happiness, right?
Sure, sure.
What would be in Happiness 101? Let's say you were designing the syllabus for that course. What would you, just of the most basic level, what would you put in that course?
What would I put in a happiness school? What jumps out at me, the first thing, is other people. I mean, I can be happy on my own up to a point.
So are you saying isolated people can't be happy?
Here's hard. There are always exceptions. And, if we're talking about the norm, there's 10%. If you're a genius musician or artist or something, and you're spend most of your time alone creating, I don't know. I wouldn't say you're unhappy.
I mean, we did a show on that last year, The Tortured Artist.
Oh.
There's a whole archetype out there of people who, they're creative types who are...
But I would bet that it's hard to keep your happiness. I bet there's a higher average of tortured artists than there are of happy, isolated artists. So I do think that, you have to have access to people. A group, a clan, a tribe, a family, or something. Happiness you would definitely have to have some sense of connection.
A support structure.
Of course, I wouldn't mind a lot of talent that I don't have.
Right.
That would be, can you earn or develop talent that you don't have? I don't know.
Well, people say it takes 10,000 hours to become a master at something. So, right. If you have the 10,000 hours to spare, sure, go out and... gain a mastery.
But I won five talents.
But let's go back to this notion of learning happiness, and let's say there was a school for happiness or a class in happiness. What would be at the center of that? I mean, you mentioned people. You mentioned connections, being connected to other people. Is that the bottom line, base, most important thing? I mean, what do you tell someone who comes in to see you who has no family, no friends? How can you help that person? How can they find their group?
Yeah, what I try to do? I try to create the feeling in them that it's good to be with me. At least start with the therapist. Start with one person. And so, my whole job with that kind of client who's grieving, who's isolated, who's depressed, who's whatever they're feeling, who doesn't have a range of feelings, is I try to make them want to stay and want to come back and enjoy being in the company of another human being. So that's what I do with them. That's primary. Of course, I'm diagnosing as we go and seeing what behaviors are hurting them more than others, and trying to fit in ideas that might help them strip away the obstacles to their happiness. But mostly, first off, being happy with being with another human being.
Excellent. And we've gotten lots of feedback from listeners out there in the last few months that have really appreciated that we've been digging up the sample clips from the archives of Armand talking about the topics that we're discussing. So we thought we'd bring you another one today. Here's Armand talking about happiness, well-being, and mental health.
Before we put it out, remember that we're going to want callers to call in and tell us what their ingredients are to being happy. Okay, let's do it.
Have a listen.
Maybe the question is whether or not people really want to be happy. Maybe we don't have much mental health around is because happiness itself has got a lot of stuff wrong with it. You know, if you think about it, maybe you don't know how to be mentally healthy. Maybe you can't imagine a life without stress. Maybe you're so used to misery that pain has become your only way of knowing you exist. Now, that's very interesting. No pain, no gain? What an expression. Does that mean that if you don't feel pain, you're not alive? You know, a lot of people feel like that. So maybe you're so used to misery that pain has become your only way of knowing you exist. Maybe the idea of mental health is so alien to you because you don't want it. Because you don't know what you'd be if you felt mentally stable. Learning to be happier, it's silly, isn't it? No one has to teach you how to feel good. Well, you know, that's what you think, but you're wrong. Are we so invested in never really growing up, never really leaving the dependency of childhood, that we actually cut off our own oxygen to choke ourselves into a kind of childlike helplessness? Now, there's a mouthful, right? But imagine you're growing up and you discover cigarettes, so you smoke cigarettes. What are we doing to ourselves? And I was one of them. What are we doing? Why are we choking ourselves back? What are we holding back? We're afraid of being all there, you see? Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. Did you ever notice that when you're feeling really good, you sometimes do something to upset yourself? Have you ever done that? You upset yourself? Or how about love? When things are going really good, is that the time you decide to bring up some issue of conflict that's going to guarantee a journey into the basement level of feelings? Oh, honey, we're getting along so well. Yes, but I want to talk to you about, you know, bring up something that you know is going to end the moment. Well, what's the story, people? Can't you leave good enough alone? You know, is that possible? Or do you think there are little creepy crawler insects that bite you when you're feeling good and infect you with this kind of destructive virus? You know, well, if that's not true, all the bugs and insects fly to Florida in the winter. So if it's true, there'd be no smile bashing in this season. You know, but there is smile bashing. I don't think we could look to the outside for blame. It's something about us. It's a human condition. Happy phobia. The fear of feeling good for any extended period of time. Where does it come from? That's an even better question. But if we're going to describe what mental health is, it is going to be being connected and being willing to feel and being in reality. Or at least that's my opinion, you know. And this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. My opinion is that if you stay in there no matter what, you don't have to be fighting every battle, that you could win every battle if you're willing to stay in the fray. I remember a man who was madly in love with a woman, and the two of them were having a wonderful time, and she was really laying it into him for something that he didn't do or he was not really culpable. And you know what he said? He said, I want you to know that I'm very angry with you, but I'm staying right here because I value what we have, and I'm going to stay right here until even if I die, I am not leaving this spot until we work this out. Whew, what a statement of love. Another person I know, a woman, was running around joining all these clubs and doing all these membership things, and she was a member of everything, and she went out to work out in the club, she went out to take courses, and she's running out of her house one day, leaving her husband behind. Her husband grabs her and holds her up against the wall and says for a minute, he says, stop, stop. What you're looking for is right here. You know? Maybe what we're looking for is right here. Maybe our health is right here on the spot, my friends. I think that mental health is two things. To be in balance with your emotions means in balance. That means not afraid to feel things. That means happy to be, to really celebrate your range of feelings. You're happy to cry, you know, you're happy to smile. There's a range. Nothing goes over the top. Everything kind of is welcomed. That's one, to be in your emotions. The other is to be in connection with people. I think that mental stability must involve connection to other people, because on your own, anybody could be stable. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you could be easily put me in a room, isolated, just put me in an igloo for the rest of my life, have nobody around me, no visitors, and I'll make up my own criteria for what sanity is. But I don't think that's what it is. So I think being in balance with your emotions, being in connection with other people, and I think there has to be a third one here, which is being in touch with reality.
Being in touch with reality. That is a big one. Reality check, so to speak. And so we heard some ingredients for happiness from Armand right there. He talked about balance of emotions, right? Allowing ourselves to feel the range of our emotions. That is, not crying all the time, right? We had the example earlier in the show. And also, not being afraid to cry either. Right. I mean, a little crying is good.
Right.
A little belly laughter is good.
Yep.
A lot of smiling is good. Right? Feeling that range, because it is such a huge range, the human range of emotions, and the connection with others. That's one thing that you had brought up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess you could add the sense of humor. That was mine. And then the last one from Armand was in touch with reality.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people who are totally out of touch with reality on one side or another side. Either they're incredibly, incredibly negative people who can never see the bright side, right? But then there's people who go so positive that they have lost that temperament, right?
Right.
Look, this is the positive mind. I see a silver lining in many things. But, balance is so critical. And I think that's what being in touch with reality is about.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of go together. And, this is a tough one. About being in reality. I mean, everybody you ask who's not in touch with reality and you ask them, are you happy? They're going to say yes. Mostly they're going to say yes. So it's a tough one, but I do agree that, when you see somebody who is not in touch with reality, happiness and a healthy mind is not the first thing that comes to your mind. You don't really say, oh, they're healthy. They're mentally healthy.
Well, what do we know about happiness? I mean, we know from research that we have a happiness set point. That's our kind of baseline for happiness.
Which you generally learned in childhood.
Yes.
You generally learned as a kid.
Which gets
back to the role models that we were talking about.
Exactly. And we know that set point is affected by all kinds of factors, right? Whether genetic or experiential. Right. So that's like nature and nurture can affect it.
Here's a good question.
We know that events that we experience can make us fluctuate around that happiness set point.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, I have a happiness level of a B+, right, as my happiness set point.
Right.
Let's say that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, let's say I get a promotion at work. Now I'm like pushing up to an A-, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I have my pet die. And now I'm down to, C-. Mm-hmm. But in the end, regardless of the happiness we feel or the unhappiness we feel, we kind of tend to come back towards that happiness set point. And that's the hedonic treadmill that we've discussed in previous episodes of the show.
Sure.
But the thing is, and here's the interesting thing, is that research has suggested that we can reset that happiness point.
Hmm.
That we can actually hit Control-Alt-Delete for you computer users out there on our happiness set point.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And there are different ways to do that. And
it's got to take practice.
It definitely does take practice. We're going to talk about those different ways to do that after the break. And for now, we're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back after this.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice. So nice. I got you. In my heart. pressure the spine. I feel nice, a sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, I got you. When I hold you in my arms, I know that I can't do no wrong. I feel nice, like sugar and spice. So nice, so nice that I got you. Wow, I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would. So good, but I got you. So good, so good, but I got you.
James Brown, I got you. I feel good. And here we are in New York City on WBAI. It's The Positive Mind. I'm Ben Starr, joined in the studio by Kevin O'Donohue.
I feel healthy.
And we have a caller on the line, a psychotherapist who wants to share with us some studies on this very subject. Thank you for calling in.
Great. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello. This is Carlo.
Hi,
I'm a
Carlo.
Psychotherapist in Stanford.
Great.
Welcome
to
the show.
Sorry?
Yeah, welcome to the show. You wanted to discuss studies on happiness.
Many years, and I had a chance to meet Armand some years back. It was a real pleasure, and you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
I really appreciate where you're taking the show, and it's still a great resource. So I'm really glad that you're doing this. So what I wanted to share was that there's actually you mentioned earlier about is there much. Research about happiness, and there's quite a lot. It's the field of positive psychology.
Sure.
That I've heard of.
With Marty Seligman, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and it's grown quite a bit beyond there, but when you were mentioning about what are the key factors to happiness, certainly one of them is developing strong relationships.
Exactly.
And there's a correlation between the number of friends, good friends you have and your level of general happiness. But there's a couple other areas, and I'll just share.
Please do.
Three key ones. One is to work on cultivating positivity, positivity, optimism.
Okay.
A big piece of that is developing a sense of gratitude.
That's a big one. That is a big one that I was going to mention, and I'm glad you did.
I have trouble with that one, by the way, Carlo. Do you, or do does the research?
No, I find, personally, I find that, when I can be more grateful, I feel better. And with my patients, when they can cultivate gratitude, something begins to shift.
Right. Okay. Certainly when they're grateful to you for the changes they're making, that must feel good. But to just the focusing on gratitude, I have trouble with. I mean, sometimes I...
In what way?
Well, if I think about it, it feels to me like I should have a gratitude, count my blessings, and I'm searching around for it, and it's an imperative, and it kind of just doesn't feel like it comes natural to me. Although there are moments when I step back and say, wow, my work has gotten me this, and
So, anyway. The exercise that I give to my patients is to write down 5 things they're grateful for.
Okay.
And I say, don't tell me what you think you should be grateful for.
Good. Okay.
Tell me what you feel right now you should be grateful for. Because when people think that what they're grateful for, it's their children, their family, the world, food on the table. And that's certainly in an intellectualized way you can be grateful for. But I say, what are you grateful for right now? Okay. And often I suggest doing this exercise before people go to bed. So sometimes people have written, I'm grateful that I have a bed. I'm grateful that my pillow is soft, you know, and that's like, okay, that's in the grand scheme of things, not something that you would think you should be grateful for. But in that moment, if you can feel it, that's what to connect with.
Carlo, I have a friend who actually writes a list every morning of things he's grateful for.
Good way to start the day.
He swears by it. One last question for you, Carlo.
Well, hold on. He had a third thing.
Two other things, actually. One is to learn how to cope effectively with the negative, you know, because negative comes up, obviously.
Okay.
You know, for example, you know, when we have anxiety, not feeling that we have to surrender to it, but how to talk back to it. Fear, right? I mean, fear, you know, encompasses all the times, and how to talk back to it. And then a really big piece is how to cultivate self-compassion.
That's huge.
I like that one the most.
That's huge.
I like that one.
Right. Okay. And then the fourth thing, so one is developing good, strong relationships. Two is to cultivate the positivity. Three is to cope more effectively with the negative, not let it overwhelm us. Mm-hmm. And the fourth is to pursue meaningful goals, you know, to have a sense of meaning in life. That, you know, we can be happy in the sense that we can do fun things. But that's transient. When we're not doing the fun thing, we may, you know, revert back to being less happy.
Carlo, do you think that happiness is a choice, or on the flip side, that staying depressed is a choice, a decision?
I heard you guys discussing it earlier, and I was yelling a little bit back at the radio. Sort of yes and no.
Exactly, here's yes and no.
You know, our experiences can make us quite unhappy, and I think there's a genetic piece to it too. But to the extent that we can cultivate happiness, then yeah, we can do something about it.
Yeah.
And so these four elements that I suggested, and they're not for me, they're from the, you know, literature that I'm familiar with.
Well, great.
And if I can suggest a book to your listeners.
Absolutely.
Sure.
It's called A Short Course in Happiness.
Nice.
And the author is Linda Wallace.
Okay.
It's actually been Amazon.
Is she here in New York?
Because
if so, Linda, if you're listening, we want you on. You know?
And she's a really happy person. I love her. But it's like a little primer. It's really thin. It doesn't go into research. It doesn't go into why you should. It just says, these are the steps.
Well, that's a lot like what Kevin mentioned about a school for happiness or a class for happiness.
It's coming. It's a growing field.
Right. So anything that's positive psychology related, there's more and more schools growing for professionals, but also some of the training I did, there was a lot of non-professionals there.
Excellent.
Pursuing, how to be happier in their lives.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I wanted to share that with
thanks
you.
Thanks so much,
thank
Carlo.
Thank you for the time.
Keep calling us, please.
Thanks for the call, Carlo.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
And you guys are doing a great job. Two weeks ago, I heard somebody really cut you guys down for not being Armand, and you're not Armand, but you're really doing something wonderful, and his spirit is still alive through you. So thank you.
We appreciate that.
Thanks again.
So take care, guys.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. That's our line right here in the studio. We're talking about mental health. We're talking about happiness. And we wanted to ask listeners, let's say you were making a class for happiness, right?
Exactly. What ingredients would you include? I mean, Armand has his ingredients, and they're tried and true, and but they're not it. I'm sure there are plenty of other things, just what Carla was saying. I like the term nourishing goals instead of meaningful goals, but everybody has their own way. What are some ways that you would frame a course in happiness? What are the ingredients? What would you require? What makes you happy now? And what can you count on to make you happy? I don't just mean have pleasure, but something that, you know, if you do and have done in the past, you can count on that it will make you happy. Let's design this course. We could have fun with this.
And let's ask a caller right now. We have John on the line. John, what would you add to this course on happiness?
Good day. How is everybody?
Good.
Hey, John. Good.
How are you?
All righty. Doing great. I think happiness, you are a product of your environment. You know, if you have a happy environment, you're going to be a happy person, I feel.
How is your environment happy, John?
Every day I wake up, I smell the fresh air every day. I smile at my neighbors, at people walking down the street. I say hello to strangers.
So you really, so it sounds almost like that gratitude that Carlo was talking about. You are the kind of guy who wakes up and is happy to be alive.
Yes, yes, every day is a blessed day.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. So if you were to give instructions, what would you tell people to do? How can I get more happiness like John? What would you say?
Let's see. But inhale
one
the
thing,
fresh air.
Just one thing, one thing.
One thing. That's tough. I don't know.
Yeah, because it seems to you naturally. It seems like you really have it naturally and have had it for a long time.
Yeah, meet me in the morning and I will greet you.
And you sound like you go to bed happy too, so you have a good, an environment that supported you probably for a long time that now happiness is ingrained in you. So I can hear it. Now, you called last week too, didn't you?
No, last week. Maybe 3 weeks ago.
I remember your voice. So it's great to hear from you. And keep listening, John. We're going to ask other people, what are the ingredients? What would they include? So keep calling, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. 212-757-5555. So John is in the nurture camp, right? John is saying it's about environmental happiness. And I would say, I'm personally a little more split. I think it's closer to 50-50. That's just
me. And Carla was saying there is genetics part, and again, it's what the role models that you had as a kid that you were, ritually and routinely exposed to, that can kind of cement your idea of what being happy and what being too happy is. I'm wondering for callers out there, were you the happiest person in your family, or were you the least happy person in your family? Frequently here at the center, we get both of those. Nobody in the middle. We rarely get somebody who's medium happy in the family. Either they were the happiest and they were told not to be, or they were the unhappiest and told to get with the program.
Our next caller is someone who's told us a lot about their family over the years here on The Positive Mind. It's Carol in Brooklyn. Long time no speak, Carol.
Yes. How are you guys?
Carol.
Good to speak again. And I'm so proud of you for keeping Armand's legacy on. And
you're
doing a great job.
Thank you, Carol.
It's part of our happy day.
In terms of happiness now, we're speaking about emotions.
Yes.
Sometimes I wake up happy. Sometimes I wake up sad.
Yeah.
I think of Frankie Beverly's song, Joy is like sunshine, sunshine and rain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the flip side of the coin. So I feel what I feel. If I wake up sad, I feel it until it passes. If I wake up happy, I don't try to force
anything.
I feel it until it passes, because it's just an emotion. So when I'm happy, I don't talk myself out of happiness.
Carol,
when I'm
that's
sad,
huge.
I don't talk myself out of sadness.
You're teaching us a great
I feel
lesson.
What I feel.
Absolutely.
Whenever I feel it. And I allow myself to feel it, and then it passes. It may pass in a day, it may pass. But I allow myself to feel what I feel, because it's just emotions.
Carol,
none
did you
is
hear,
better than one.
Did you hear about 20 minutes ago we played a clip of Armand just talking about...
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Basically, the assertion was that one of the important factors in mental health is feeling a balance of emotions, not being afraid to feel the range, right? And just like you said, to stay with it.
Right. Because when I'm happy, I don't say, why am I happy? Oh, I need to... Find a reason why I'm happy. I feel it. When I'm sad, I say it's something that needs to come out, and I need to feel it until it passes. Mm. And I feel it until it passes. If I feel like crying, I cry.
Wow.
I may be walking sometimes and I'm feel sad and I cry wherever I am. I don't care who is seeing me cry, because when I'm smiling, I don't care who sees me smile.
Carol,
so I just do it.
Do you have somebody in your life? It sounds like whoever lives with you is the lucky guy or lucky person. You know, that you let yourself feel what you feel, and that's an important ingredient to being happy.
Yeah.
So thanks for the lesson. Thanks for putting it out to us today.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
And I'll always listen to you when I can. Okay.
Thank you, Carol. We miss you. Call us again
yes,
sooner
I
this
will.
Time.
I will. I miss
forever.
You, too.
Okay.
Be well.
Okay, bye.
So, you know, she brings up that point also that Armand ended the clip with, which is it's right here, right now, folks. I mean, you can be fighting with your wife, your spouse, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your child, your world, your life today. You could be fighting with it, but if you hang in there, just sit through these negative feelings, even if, you know, you turn to your partner and say, okay, I'm going to sit here, but I'm not going to say anything to you, and I want you to do the same thing. You know, let the feelings, the emotions go through you, and you know, being happier is waiting for you. It'll be there.
Let's see how many callers we can get on between now and the end of the program. We have Julie on the line. Julie, thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
What's your ingredient, Julie?
Well, I have been trying to cultivate compassion for others. Uh-huh. And I feel like when I do loving things for other people, it brings me great joy.
Uh-huh. See, so we're going to write that one down. Having a focus outside yourself. Would is that a summary for it, or really?
I think so. Focus outside yourself and onto really other people.
Yes.
You know,
when
you help, let yourself feel their feelings and just have compassion for them, whether they're feeling joy or sorrow.
Yeah, so you actually do this. This isn't abstract. It's not like you're prescribing it for people. You actually do this and it feels good for you?
Something I'm working on doing. You know.
Yeah.
It brings me great joy. So
Right.
I'm working on it, though. It doesn't always work.
Sure.
Sometimes you need to remind yourself.
Sure. But it's something you find value. You definitely think would be part of our course. And when was the last time you practiced it or tried it?
Today, actually, when I put the needs of my boyfriend's daughter ahead of my own. And I realized that, you know, my needs didn't even matter anymore. Like, there was no question that she came first. And that might be easy because he's someone I love, but I wanted to do it, you know, for everybody all the time. Just as I'm driving, let the car go ahead of me. Sure, cut in. It's that kind of attitude.
Oh, you're in that good space. Okay. So, yeah, that feels really good when you can bypass your own needs or even consciously say, my needs are okay, but I'm going to let them be secondary to this right now. Is that a way of putting it?
That is, yes.
I just even saying it, I felt good. I felt good for you, and I feel good. And hopefully when I drive home tonight, I'm going to stick my arm out and let people come right in.
Go ahead, exactly.
Well, Julie, nice to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
Thank you.
Stay well. Bye. Bye-bye. Yeah, so that's definitely one in there. We're getting up to seven now. There are seven ingredients, and I agree with this one. How do you feel about this one, about compassion?
I think it's very important, and I think for those people who were listening just before the break when we heard the clip talking about sort of the ingredients for mental health, number one was balance of emotions, and that's what Carol discussed, right? She said, if I cry, if I need to cry, I cry. If I need to laugh, I laugh.
Yeah.
And there's no sense in hiding or running from either.
Right.
Number two was connection with others, and I think that ties in strongly to what Julie just shared with us, which is compassion and service to others is a form of connection to others.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we heard Carlo, our first caller, psychologist, or psychiatrist, I'm not sure.
I think he said psychologist.
Okay. Carlo said that developing relationships is one of the biggest keys to happiness. So, you know,
with significant people.
Yeah, I think it's a 1-2 punch of the fearlessness in emotion and the willingness to experience emotion, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are also afraid to experience positive emotion. I mean, we talked about self-sabotage. You know, think about it. How many times have you heard someone say, well, I've met this new person and I really like them and everything's going well, but, you know, I don't want to get into this.
We haven't had the talk yet.
I don't want to get into this situation because I know eventually it's just going to end and I'm going to be hurt.
Right.
Right?
Oh, gosh.
And so they forgo this whole potential experience because of an anticipation of something that they've felt in the past.
Right. Right. We haven't talked about this. This is pretty critical stuff. Like, if to get back to what you were saying about your happiness set point, if you're a B plus and getting into a relationship is going to mean, I'm going to go into the A plus category, and that's dangerous. That's unsafe for me. I have to do something to keep it down to a B plus. So, you know, on this show that we're playing a clip from, Armand says, You know, do you, whenever you feel really good, what is it? Not do you, but what is it? What is it that you do to sabotage it, you know, to ruin your shot at really feeling happy? And it's something we all do. We all want to get back to that comfortable set. That's why, Ben, I was saying when you said that you can reset your happiness set point, that it has to probably take a lot of practice.
Yeah. Well, let's take one more caller for today. We have Sergey from Brooklyn on the line. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be with you. So my recipe for happiness,
yes, sir, please,
is to surround myself with happy, positive people.
There you go.
To eat healthy, okay, to kick all the habits, bad habits away. Mm. No alcohol, no tobacco, mm-hmm, no drugs. Mm. Just positive thinking, and also meditation is very important. To take time to yourself. It could be 10 minutes, or it could be 1 hour a day, or, you know, as much as you can spend for meditation, because we need a really clear mind, clear mind from all the stress or all the problems, all the negativity. Just, you need that time for yourself. We live in a really busy environment. The environment is not natural for human.
I happen to agree with you there, Sergey. And you know, you mentioned food. I think that's critical, and surrounding yourself with positive people. I think those are both really critical points that you make, and I thank you for contributing those today.
I wonder, absolutely, Sergey, was there a time when you weren't surrounded by happy people? I mean, did you step back one day and say, "Oh, I'm happy," and I think the reason is I have all these good people around me?
Or... Absolutely. No, I've been in a really bad situation, bad places.
Okay.
I'm trying to work on myself every day, and change myself. It's all about neurochemistry in your brain. It's all about serotonin. Serotonins and dopamines, you know.
Nice,
it's,
exactly.
So it's just changing bad habits and starting something new positive every day.
So
go ahead.
So when you see a sad person or run into them, you know automatically, okay, I'm not going to engage too far.
I can engage this person and change him. Just give him information.
Oh.
This person is sad because he probably has some bad patterns or something that he's trying to change and can't. So sometimes people are not even trying to change anything. They just get used to it, and they just settle for worse.
Well, look, you gave us another great ingredient. Surround yourself with happy people. We're going to have to wrap up, but Sergey, we appreciate you calling. Keep calling us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Have a good
day. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And thank you to everyone who called in today on The Positive Mind. Sergey mentioned dopamine and serotonin. If you haven't gotten the chance to check it out, have a listen to the episode we did recently on brain chemistry. It has all kinds of information on that. And we thank you for tuning in again. You can find the podcast on iTunes, on the iTunes store. Search for Positive Mind. Send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. And as always, you can find us here at the DeMel Center on West 57th Street. And, you can give us a call. What's our number here?
It's 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488.
Yeah, that's if you are interested in speaking with Kevin or any one of the fantastic folks here at the DeMel Center. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m., same place, 99.5 FM, right here in New York City. And right now, we will be cutting away slightly early to give you a special news bulletin update from the WBAI news team, giving you a little information on the primaries today in New York State. So thanks again for listening, and this has been The Positive Mind on WBAI. Thank you.